Good morning or afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to EMForum.org. I'm Amy Sebring. I will serve as your moderator today, and we are very glad you could join us. For our newcomers, we will be providing some instructions as we go along so you can relax and participate with us. Now, one of the highest priorities, typically following a disaster, regardless of the cause, is restoration of power to essential facilities. Today, we are going to learn about how pre-planning specifically for energy emergencies can make a difference in the response and recovery phases. Fortunately, the Public Technology Institute, PTI, has published some guidelines on just how to do this, and we think you will find the basic concepts familiar. A little bit about PTI, although Ron is going to tell us some more about it. PTI actively supports local government executives and elected officials through research, education, consulting services, and national recognition programs. Research and program areas include information technology and telecommunications services, energy and environment, e-government, mobile government, citizen engagement and responsive government, public safety technology, and insurance and security. Now, please note there are several links to related materials posted on today's background page. Now, for the benefit of our first-timers, we will begin with an overview presentation and then proceed to your questions and comments. Now, if you have any difficulty with live meeting, you may use the feedback drop-down menu at the top right to indicate you're having a problem, and then my associates, Ava G. Moore and Lori Weber, will try to assist you, and if they are successful, please do change your color back to green. We will provide further instructions just before we begin the Q&A, but we ask you not to submit your question or comment until we get to that part of the program. We also ask you not to send any private messages to the speakers or the moderator, as we will be busy with the presentation. We are making a live meeting recording and an audio-only MP3 version, which should be available later this afternoon, and then the text transcript will be posted early next week. Now, if you are not on our mailing list, you can subscribe from our homepage, and then you will get a notice when these materials are ready. Now, it is my pleasure to introduce today's guest. Rhonda Mosley is Assistant Executive Director for Research and Government Services for PTI and was the project manager for the preparation of the guidelines. Dr. Steve Fouts serves as strategic advisor to PTI and provides leadership on its Sustainability Council, advocating for environmental and energy issues at the local level. And George Burmeister also serves as strategic advisor to PTI and is president of the Colorado Energy Group in Boulder. And that company assists local and state governments and the private sector with energy efficiency and renewable energy technology policy and program implementation. Again, please see today's background page for further biographical information. Welcome to you all. Thank you very much for joining us today. And I now turn the floor over to Rhonda to start us off, please.
Great. Thanks, Amy. I'm going to flip the slide. Good. Just so that everyone can take just a moment to look at our agenda as we walk through the processes for developing an energy assurance plan. So, again, thanks, Amy and the group. Good afternoon or good morning, wherever you're calling from. Again, this is Rhonda Mosley. I'm the LEAP Program Director with Public Technology Institute, which is known as PTI. And LEAP, we'll be throwing several acronyms at you, and I guess it's my job to kind of tell you what those acronyms mean. LEAP is the Local Government Energy Assurance Program. And I want to join Amy in welcoming you today to the webinar and certainly thanking you for spending your time with us this afternoon or this morning. During the webinar today, we want to introduce you to energy assurance planning. And we want to share our experiences working with local governments across the country as they prepare energy assurance plans. So let me go to the next slide. So what is energy assurance planning? It's really very simple. Energy assurance is about guaranteeing citizens, your constituents, that reliable, critical services will be there when you need them. We want to help you understand and elevate the importance of energy security and assurance issues within your city. So that's our goal for today's session. And we're certainly looking forward to answering your questions at the end of the session, because we think there'll be a lot of active discussion about why we're doing this and why energy assurance is important. So why is energy assurance important? Because what do most of your critical services or your essential services need to operate or to function? They obviously need energy. Most importantly, an energy assurance plan should never stand alone. A robust energy assurance plan needs to be part of or a section of any city's or county's emergency response plan or continuity of operations plan. And this plan needs to be exercised and adapted as changes are identified. So, we know that this energy assurance planning process could be a new undertaking for you. So we want, during the webinar, to explain energy assurance and the steps that we think are important to help you think through the planning process. We want to help you elevate the understanding of energy interdependencies and to help you understand your unique city energy profile. We want to enhance understanding of how renewable energy technologies could be utilized within your city to promote not only sustainability but also resiliency and energy assurance. And we also want to help you think through the actions that can ease the impacts of short-term disruptions and help define options and strategies for dealing with sustained outages. And a really, really good example is what happened very recently in San Diego, where in Yuma, Arizona, a worker on the lines tripped a switch, and it caused a 12-hour blackout in the city of San Diego. And so we know these things happen. We know that they happen. We take an all-hazards approach. We know they happen because of human error. We know that they happen because of human involvement, terrorism. We know that they happen because of natural disasters. And so we really want to help you think through some plans for what could happen during a short-term disruption and what could happen to your constituents and to your critical services when dealing with something of longer duration. So let me go back and talk a little bit, and I really appreciate, Amy, the introduction you gave to PTI. You did my work for me, so thank you very much. PTI is a nonprofit organization. We're located in Alexandria, Virginia, and per the moniker at the top, we've been in existence for 40 years, so we're celebrating our 40th anniversary. And our mission is really to provide the benefits of technology to all local governments, large, medium, and small, 87,000 units of local government across the country. That's who we're working for and dealing with. We've been working on local government energy assurance programming and planning for the last 5 years and have collected a vast volume of information that we created on our own and that we've gleaned from other people. And all of that can be found on our local government energy assurance website, which is at the bottom of the screen, energyassurance, all one word, .us. And I would absolutely encourage each of you to check out that website, to put it on one of your favorites, because we are always hosting free webinars. We are always publishing new documents. We're always updating plans. And we have a ton of items that we think may be of interest to you, and that'll be up on the website. So we've been doing this for the past 5 years. And then about 2 years ago, when the ARRA grants became available, the Department of Energy selected 43 cities across the country, again, large, medium, and small, to and granted them funding to develop energy assurance plans. And so PTI has been tasked with providing technical assistance to these 43 cities, and now our mission turns to taking all of these lessons learned and best practices from these 43 cities and creating documentation to help all the governments, you know, those 87,000 units that I talked about earlier, to help you understand the importance of energy assurance planning, to provide continued technical assistance, and to share those best practices and lessons learned so that we can help you also develop a robust energy assurance plan as part of your continuity of operations plan or as part of your existing emergency response plan. So how do we do that? So here's just a list on this slide of some of the ways that we can help you. And all of this information is available free of charge, and it's available on that energyassurance.us website. We have a version one of the local government energy assurance guidelines. It has some wonderful checklists in it. So I would encourage you to take a look at that document. It is rather lengthy, but as I said at the end, there are some wonderful checklists and a very good generator, I guess it's like a generator assessment program that we adapted from the Energy Industries of Ohio that would be very helpful to you. It's very easy, and it's very self-explanatory, and that would help you if you wanted to do a generator capacity assessment in your city. We have a wide variety of technical papers, guidance papers, and policy papers on the website on a vast variety of issues, anything from financing energy assurance to working with elected officials to researching and looking for amateur radio operators in your city that have emergency response technical expertise and reach out to those types of folks. Obviously, with the funding from the Department of Energy for work in energy assurance, we were able to develop a 10-step framework. So I hope as we go through the documentation today, we'll be able to elaborate on those 10 steps and really explain to you why we think those steps are important as you embark on this process. We have a lot of technical assistance availability, especially the peer-to-peer, which means you'll be talking to equals from cities of similar size to yours. We can connect you with those people, and they can really explain why this process was important to them, not only elected officials, but, policymakers. We can talk to technical folks and really help you understand why this process is so important and how it's helped those other cities as they prepare for any type of disaster. And then we're always interested in talking to people about energy assurance, why it's important, soliciting participation, and of course, supporting and assisting any government at all, any local government entity at all, with starting the process and with working with you throughout the process and then having you complete your plan. So with that, I think I've kind of laid the groundwork, so I'd like to turn it over at this point to Steve Fout, who is a member of the PTI technical team, and he will start drilling down a little bit and talking to you about the need for energy assurance planning. And then we'll turn it over to George, and he'll walk you through the 10 steps, and then we'll open it up for questions and answers. So with that, Steve, I will turn it over to you.
Thank you. Good day, all the cities, and thank you, Rhonda. I think we're on the slide now, the need for local government energy assurance planning. I just want to start out by saying these 4 points, these needs were largely determined through a survey that PTI took back in 2006 and 2007. Rhonda talked briefly about PTI has been involved in this work for about 5 years, and that's about when it started. And PTI has a list of experts in various different fields regarding local governments, communities, and we took some surveys at that time and came up with at least these 4 needs regarding local governments. And you might be interested to know that Rhonda mentioned it, but the U.S. has over 39 units of local government, and that's just in cities and counties. If you count school and special districts, I think the number is closer to 90,000. Rhonda mentioned 87,000, so it's something in that number, and it's a very, very large number. So, and of those, only a handful have completed energy assurance plans, and of those, they've only been developed in just the last 2 or 3 years, so really at the early stages of this energy assurance planning. The first one is just the lack of awareness in planning, response, and recovery, and it shows up mostly in most communities in a gap in the personnel who are trained and educated in the basics of planning, response, and recovery. It also shows up in another area, too, that we've really found that Most local governments do not have plans for backup generation, and they do not have adequate communication technology or plans and protocols in place. And many of you know how important that is in emergency response. And for those governments that do have emergency plans, most of them do not address energy assurance or resiliency as a topic. The third area is aging infrastructure. That's across the board from the local government clear across the United States. So whether it's transformers or switching gear or the transportation distribution system, much of it is aged. You read articles in the paper all the time about that. It's in need of repair, replacement, and all these things make them more vulnerable to outages. But the cost is a big factor here, and what we find most energy service companies are doing is they're taking more of a Band-Aid approach rather than they are fixing the system. And we're going to talk about the smart grid in a little while here. Last, Rhonda mentioned the recent event in San Diego. I don't know whether people are just reporting them more or because of communication enhancement, but we're seeing a marked increase in the number of events and emergencies which are impacting energy generation, transmission, and distribution, and then finally services to the end user. So those are some of the reasons why PCI thinks it's important, and we hope that you will agree it's important that we get to as many local governments as possible and have these energy assurance plans developed. Next slide, please. Rhonda touched on these three goals basically in her opening remarks, but I'm going to be repeating some of the things that I've said previously, and George will probably repeat some of them as well, just because not only because they're important, because they're germane to different aspects of the energy assurance planning process. So the guidelines version 1 and 2 and the 10-step framework that George is going to be talking about are key documents that locals can use to develop the energy assurance plan. And George is going to be providing a slide at the end of the presentation that contains web links to these documents. Regarding response, local government response can be thought of kind of like emergency roadside assistance. That's where the way I look at it. If your car's engine shuts down in bad weather and you need to respond by either fixing yourself, which requires advanced planning, or calling AAA if you have AAA, it may take AAA a while to show up. And then until then, you're kind of on your own. You know, you need blankets, water, food, those sorts of things. It's the same for energy emergencies. Communities need to plan on being self-sufficient for at least 72 hours until reinforcements arrive. And a lot of times those reinforcements can come from other areas of the state or the region or the feds. So you better have a backup energy equipment, fuel, and communications equipment and protocols for in your own community, just like you would need on your car if you're out on the road. Regarding a recovery, using that same analogy, the roadside assistance one, when you get home, you need to have your vehicle fully checked out and assure that it continues to operate at its previous level of performance. The same with when an energy emergency is over, energy services need to be restored to their previous level of performance, and that might take a while. People have expectations in the community that its services will be restored and they're going to enjoy the same level of performance they did before the emergency, and that's a tall order. Next slide. PCI has several objectives, and in some cases we're quantifying these. In some cases we are just going to have and will continue to accomplish some of the things on this slide. We produce the guiding documents that we talked about before, technical and policy papers that Rhonda mentioned, such as media relations, decision-maker communication, interdependency, and then the DOE resources and web links. So that's one of our objectives, is just to keep producing those kinds of helpful pieces of information. Second of all, we solicit participation in the energy assurance planning development by getting the word out. Again, almost 90,000 units of local government in the United States. That's a big challenge, and it's very daunting. And in order to do that, we need all hands on deck, and we could use your help in this area, not only for your community, but to reach out to other communities and pass the word and tell them about this opportunity. Another thing we do is we provide support to locals, and we do that by we often review draft plans. Ron mentioned, again, we offer peer-to-peer exchanges, and a lot of other just technical assistance. We're starting on a brand new process where we're compiling best practices, lessons learned, and what we call success stories. And we want to compile these by topic and also by geographical area and city, have points of contact. Obviously, City A has read something very interesting about how to get information from their local utility. When they haven't been successful, they may find two or three other local governments or special districts who were successful, and they could learn some of those lessons and find out exactly how they did it and implement those in their own jurisdiction. So we think this database, which is hopefully it's going to be kind of a searchable database, and we're just starting on it now, will be very helpful, and that will be a continual work in progress. And then we have the website with some helpful links. So we try to do as much as we can for local governments to help them out because we want everyone that's possible to embark on their own process. Next slide, please. Some important aspects of energy assurance planning. One of the first and most important aspects is for communities to have a good grasp of the PTA energy assurance guidelines, those versions 1 and 2. These guidelines are just that. They step interested communities to the development of their own energy assurance plan. And the 10-step framework that we all offer also can be used as a tool to help formulate their plan. And then finally, the federal government has many, many response initiatives that together, these together form the context for local energy assurance plans. And I can tell you the ones that I know of that we've helped people out and the ones that are completed, all three of these things have been very, very helpful. The guidelines, the policy papers, the 10-step framework, and all of these local, these federal resources. In the previous slide, I mentioned that PTI produces some policy and technical papers. One of those topics is interdependencies, and it's kind of a big word, but basically what we're talking about here is that many community systems are dependent on the availability of energy services. Some of those, you can imagine, is water delivery for pumping. Water sanitation requires a lot of electrical power, for example. Even the transportation sector, many communities have light rail or rail systems that are electrified, and traffic lights in every community are operated using electricity. And so it's important to be aware of these interdependencies. Another topic is regional planning. As you're aware, regional planning is important because emergencies don't really respect political boundaries, so you really have to get involved not just with your own community but with the communities that surround you. Partnering, all of us are partners during emergencies, and this goes for energy emergencies as well. So all stakeholders really need to be at the table. And the number one area that we've found that's the most important, and I'm sure you're aware of it as being emergency responders, is that communications is the most important. If you can't communicate with somebody across the hallway or somebody across town or somebody in another city, all the best plans laid will not work very well. And so communications is so very, very important. Not only technology and equipment, but people and protocols and procedures need to be in place. And lastly, knowing the causes and failures of energy systems is also very important because that helps you become aware of what's coming and what sort of a breakdown there's been. So let's look at two of these causes and on the next slide. After energy is generated, it's transmitted across long lines and distributed locally. There are many types of energy emergencies that could cause a disruption in service from your energy service provider. Some of us are aware of a lot of these and some of us aren't. But being aware of the many failure types is important. Some of those are short circuits, relay switches can go bad, transformers can break down, there can be substation failures. But having a knowledge of these will assist you in any response and recovery efforts you undertake with your partners. And it can also be really useful when you're trying to estimate the duration of an outage for response activities and communication. Constituents always want to know how long the power is going to be out, and they want to know when it's going to come back on, whether full power is going to be restored. It's always very complicated, and it's hard to give good estimates. But the more you can know about your transmission and distribution system and what can possibly cause those failures, the better you can communicate with your energy service provider and communicate that to your constituents. Let's go to the next slide. What we found is there are some common elements that governments are putting in their energy assurance plan, and obviously many of these are driven by the guidelines and the 10-step framework, but some of the common themes that are emerging are threats and risk to energy infrastructure and related interdependencies. What happens with these energy interdependencies, if there are a lot of them, and they usually are, they're called cascading failures. So one failure in the energy system leads to a failure in the water system, and it leads to a failure in the transportation system. And so an assessment, doing a risk assessment and trying to mitigate that risk beforehand is very important. I've already talked a little bit about communication. That's a real hot topic. It's a common theme in most every, and I would say a central theme in every energy assurance plan. It includes equipment, technology, and entities such as print and radio media, as well as amateur operators, otherwise known as HAM operators, TV and cable companies, and et cetera. Backup generators, fuel delivery, and training are very, very important. Most cities, I would say, do not have adequate backup electrical, if you want to just take a look at electrical for a minute, generating capacity to power their critical facilities when the power goes out. They either just haven't thought of it, or if a backup generator is in place, maybe it hasn't been exercised recently, maybe it doesn't have the right capacity to generate electricity for all critical operations, so it's a very key area. The roles and responsibilities, that comes from us working with you. This includes working with and under the general direction of the Office of Emergency Preparedness and Management. Tabletop exercises and certification. Most of you or some of you might be aware of the NIMS training, National Incident Management System. They have all sorts of courses. That's a common element in many of them. More and more plans, and we'll encourage them to look at renewable energy. Those sorts of applications need to be evaluated carefully, but solar and wind and other applications do have places in some plans. And new technologies are starting to be included in some of the plans, for example, smart grid. And smart grid is basically a modernization of the current electric grid so that it's more reliable and secure. It offers a two-way flow of energy and, most importantly, information. It can monitor and protect and automatically optimize energy supply and demand. So a power loss in one area, geographical area, can be satisfied through smart generation, transportation, and distribution system. So it's really a smart system. It's a smart grid, and that's where the name came from. We do have a paper on that on the website as well. Next slide. Here are just some lists of some of those federal energy assurance planning response initiatives that I mentioned earlier. So we have the websites here, and we have some of them. There's a lot more, but these tend to be the most helpful. So with that, I will turn it over to George so he can go over the 10-step framework with you. Thank you very much for your attention.
Hi, everybody, and thank you, Steve. Thank you very much. Well done. I'm George Burmeister in Boulder, Colorado, lead author for the version 2 of the Energy Assurance Guidelines document, and I'll talk about the 10-step framework now after about 30 seconds of intro comments. I'll fly through each one of those in about a minute each. Hopefully you're looking at steps 1 and 2 now, a slide with some people sitting in a circle. I'm not viewing your live presentation. Wanted to second Steve's core comments that energy assurance is about both saving lives and keeping the wheels of commerce churning and turning. This 10-step framework that you'll hear about, we designed this with the U.S. Department of Energy in 2010 and 2011. It'll help you write an energy assurance plan. And we'll use this as kind of an abbreviated version for you, since some of you may not be interested in or involved in starting an energy assurance plan. Building your planning team, step one, we talk about putting together a planning team to write and implement your plan. Usually the person at the helm is called the Energy Assurance Coordinator. This person needs to be a consensus builder, someone who works well with across all departments. You want an action-oriented listener if you can get one, someone who carries some authority and is taken seriously. Also helps to have someone who works well with your energy providers and your major energy users, since you'll need to get info and support from them over time. This person is the hub of your energy assurance information, so they need to be organized, too. In Raleigh, North Carolina, the coordinator works out of the emergency management office. Others work out of mayor's offices or public works, sustainability offices, or planning departments and environmental affairs officers. There is no wrong place to have your energy assurance coordinator. But with respect to your working group, you want as many people under the tent as possible. Usually 6 to 15 people is the norm. San Jose, California has, I think, 13 city departments represented on their working group. And since energy is, we like to say, the connective tissue that runs across all departments, you will be hard-pressed to think of a department that shouldn't somehow be involved in your working group. Final note on this one, Portland, Oregon, and Roswell, Georgia are sharing their energy assurance information with their working group over the web, which can really expand your universe and bring in more support. Step two is about knowing your energy emergency authority framework. Knowing what your government is allowed to do and what local ordinances, state and federal laws come into play during your energy assurance planning is really valuable. Your critical infrastructure is likely to be not working during a major energy emergency, so you don't want to be trying to do your legal research when you don't have any internet, phones, or electricity. You want to ask questions such as, in an emergency, what do our electric or gas utilities have to do? What are they legally responsible for doing? Who has the responsibility for protecting our critical assets? You know, what must we tell the public? And how much influence do you have with your local utility when it comes to restoring power to your key assets that Steve talked about earlier? And finally, what triggers emergency contracting authorities? It's good to have legal counsel involved with you. Next slide, please. Hopefully you're looking at step three, emergency response roles. This is a logical extension of step two. You want to avoid needless duplication and accidentally contradicting what someone else might be doing in your government or in the private sector. Once you know your legal authorities from step two, your roles and responsibilities tend to fall out pretty well and become better known. Steve mentioned some of the federal responsibilities and federal pieces of regulations that you should be familiar with, the National Response Framework and Emergency Support Function, ESF-12, is important. It helps, very helpful to find out what your energy emergency preparedness plan already outlines for each department to do in an energy emergency. And if you have a major power outage with possible lives lost due to a natural disaster, you know, when does the Red Cross get involved? Who calls them? What protocols do you have in place for contacting them and other NGOs? Step four, moving to knowing your local government energy profile, major new theme in version two and only lightly touched on in version one. Gathering energy data for your local government operations is crucial. You want to take care of your internal government energy profile first and then your businesses later. It's a bonus if you can do them too. It's a huge, huge task. You need to know who is consuming the energy and how. If you've done a climate action plan or a greenhouse gas emissions plan or community energy plan, you've already put together some of this information, so you can use this data to start from. Next slide, please. Hopefully you're looking at step five, identifying and working with your energy suppliers. Step four was more about knowing how your energy is used, and step five is more about knowing who supplies your energy and working with them more closely. I'm going to hit this strongly because it's one of the most important steps. You know, who do you get your energy from now and how? Is it a municipal utility or an electric co-op or an investor-owned utility or a blend of these? You need close working relationships with key people across your energy supply industry. Do you have a nuclear plant down south, a natural gas plant up north, a coal plant to the east? You know, how does your coal arrive if you use coal? You know, is it through a port, by train, from where? By ship, barge, river? You know, where are your pipelines? Does your supply come from pipelines, and if so, how much? Work with your retailers, too. What highways are used for the transportation of your gasoline and diesel supplies to your gas stations? where are your transmission lines and how much of your electricity comes from what sources. So you want to just find out details about your energy supply. And again, this helps keep those wheels of commerce turning and churning. Next slide, please. Hopefully step six, knowing your primary key contacts. We talked earlier, and you heard Steve talk about your major energy consumers inside and outside of government. Again, you need to know who to contact within each of these areas, and it's much more than simply knowing generally who to contact in an energy emergency. It means knowing who to call, when to call them, which numbers you can reach them, and what their specific roles will be during an energy emergency. Energy emergency management folks, they'll tell you that going three deep, quote-unquote, is common, you know, making sure you have the correct contact information for these three people across all departments can take time. And your energy assurance coordinator needs to pull together this information and keep it updated as well. Step seven, identifying critical assets, you heard Steve talk about, is one of the most important parts of the energy assurance plan. Obviously, key assets are about maintaining health, safety, and the welfare of your citizens. These usually include police stations, fire stations, 911 call centers, and, of course, hospitals and the public and private sector. But, you know, where do these assets get their energy supply from? How are they likely to be impacted? Energy assurance is about continuing to deliver the key services to these assets and from these assets. So it's about finding these assets, labeling them, and prioritizing. You can look to PTI's version 2 and version 1, as Rhonda referenced earlier, for critical asset categories that can help you. Community centers, high-rise buildings, emergency services, schools, and don't forget water systems. A lot of people overlook them. The water systems and wastewater systems and pumping stations are very, very key assets. You can't do without them. Next slide, please. We'll go quickly through steps 8, 9, and 10. Developing a crisis communication protocol. We know that many of you are experts at communications. It's what some of you do very well. You know, you need it both internally within government and externally with the public and the press. You're trying to prevent panic and educate the public about the nature of your energy issue. And energy assurance communication protocols, they take place as part of your broader government-wide communication protocols. You notice Facebook and Twitter on logos on our slide. We're not advocating for them, but rather simply acknowledging the increasingly important communications role that they're playing for you. These sites can be used to relay quick, accurate energy information from your government, mass text messages and e-alerts. They can be used effectively to keep the public informed and actually save lives. Step 9 is developing additional partnerships, local, state, federal, and NGOs. Some may overlook this step due to its general nature. However, it's crucial. As you're putting together your plan, you'll realize that you're forgetting some people here and there, and you want to include as many people as possible. So always be looking for new partners, partners such as your regional councils of government, your COGS can be important, your local industry associations and organizations can be helpful, petroleum associations, major retailer associations, and other local governments with energy assurance experience. The Salvation Army, environmental groups, consumer groups, don't overlook homeowner associations, HOAs. They can be key allies in your energy assurance planning. And finally, step 10, the final slide, please. Updating your plan and keeping it current. We need to keep all our plans current and updated. It's a live, living document. Annual updates are at least every 2 years is recommended. It can take several months to update it, but it's very important to set up a web presence, maybe some blogs, special email alerts, and monthly energy assurance updates. You're trying to keep people engaged and caring about energy assurance. And one of the ways to do that is through tabletop exercises. Practice what it would be like to go through a real energy emergency. Rhonda and Steve and I, we made a film, an energy assurance film that's available. You can see it on the energyassurance.us website that Rhonda referenced. But we made that in Raleigh earlier, North Carolina this year. We interviewed dozens of local government people who are experts in energy assurance, and most of them talk about the importance of practicing perfect, quote-unquote, and how valuable it is to practice hard. You really can save lives. Finally, get a formal budget for your plan and your update into the out years if possible. you know how it is. You know the drill. If you're only as important as your budget in some governments, unfortunately. So get a budget for it and update your plan as you go along. Update your energy supply data as you get new data. As new energy supply comes online, update your plan. If a new civic center is built, update your plan. A major new commercial or residential development comes to town, update your plan. And a new factory comes to town with new load, update your plan. So the more energy data points you have, the better for your energy assurance plan. So that's kind of jumping into the and flying through the 10 steps on how to put together a plan. We're available to help, of course, you do that. And I want to thank you very much for listening, and I guess give it back to Amy.
Very good. Thanks so much to all of you. Now we will proceed to our Q&A. Let me put up the instructions real quick. And to submit your input or ask a question, just click on Q&A from the top menu, and then you'll type in the top half of the box that opens up. Then click on Ask or hit Enter. And there is a hand-raising feature there, but we do not use that in our sessions. When you click on Ask, your comment or question does not go directly to the screen. Goes to an admin panel that I will moderate, and I will announce who the question is from, read the question aloud, and our guests will respond via the conference bridge. And then I will type in text OK, which will release it to your Q&A panel where you can review it. And because of the way live meeting works, you will only be able to submit one question or comment at a time. Please keep your question or comment related to today's topic and reasonably concise. And if you can address your question to one of our speakers by name, by all means, please do. We are ready to begin now. So please do enter your question or comment at any time. And it's, as usual, sometimes it takes a little while people are thinking about what they want to input to get started on that. We do have one now. This is from Ava Jean. And Ava Jean Moore, and she says, Rhonda, thanks for being here today. Do you have any statistics or idea of how many local jurisdictions have a leak plan or whatever they may call their plan? Having experienced some lengthy power outages due to ice storms, I am glad to hear about this effort.
Great. Thanks. That's a fantastic question. You know, as we've said during the presentation today, this is a relatively it's surprising to those of us who work in energy, but this is a relatively new idea and new topic, especially for local governments. The states have been working on energy assurance plans for about 7 years, but really the emphasis and any funding towards doing this at the local government level has just happened in the last 2 years. So, you know, first of all, we're really excited and we thank the Department of Energy for their recognition of how important local governments are. You know, you all are the first line of defense when something happens. As you well know, you've all experienced, you know, natural, you know, I wouldn't call them all disasters, but certainly natural events that have caused power outages. So right now, we know that through our research in the past, some local governments, just a handful, have looked at energy in the early 90s. And we have seen some of those plans, and obviously they're outdated and they need some work. But at least there was an effort to look at the importance of energy. And then it kind of fell off. And so right now there are 43 cities across the country, large, medium, and small. And if you go to the website, you can see who those cities are and actually get the contact information for the principal investigator for each of those cities. And you can reach out to them. But of those 43 cities, they have to, depending on their grant period, most of them have to have the work and the plans completed within the next year. So that will be our test bed. That's really the first attempt by cities and counties to produce, you know, robust energy assurance plans that follow this 10-step framework. So I would say within the next year, we will have a very good look at energy assurance plans from small, medium, and large cities, and those will be very good examples of what you can do, and then they will also serve as mentors for the cities that are coming in the second tier. So I hope that answers your question. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you. Let me ask a follow-up question to that. You mentioned that the, you know, state level have been working on these energy assurance planning perhaps a little bit longer than, you know, this local initiative. And obviously one would think that if any state assurance plan might be available, that that would be a planning resource for the local governments. Can you give me a little idea about what the status of that state planning is, and if I were local, where I might try to get that information?
Yeah, that's a very good question. There are state plans. Those are all also to be completed by in the course of the next year, and some states are a lot further ahead than other states. So what I would do, what I would advise, and we absolutely, if you are interested in starting an energy assurance plan for your jurisdiction, we absolutely advocate that you reach out to your states, because every state is working on a plan as well. What they will share will vary depending on, you know, the information. You know, some information needs to be redacted. So, you know, it'll just depend on each state as to what they will share with you. But usually these plans are being produced out of the energy office at your state level, or the PUC, the Public Utilities Commission. So I would start there and just start asking questions about, you know, who's in charge of the plan, who's doing the plan, and if you can have a look at it. But I think that's a fantastic idea, and we absolutely advocate reaching out to the state to see what they're doing and to you know, get a redacted copy of their plan as soon as it's available. But it is, you know, over the course of the next year, I think the states are also needing to get their plans. And these will, you know, just because we say they're due in a year doesn't mean, you know, I really want to underscore what George said. You know, these are living documents. So, you know, you'll get a copy of a plan, but it's going to, you know, be changed. It's going to, you know, be updated as things occur inside a state or inside a city. So just take that into account. George, Steve, anything you want to add?
Yes, thanks, Rhonda. Hi, it's George in Boulder. One important addendum there. The equivalent of Rhonda and Steve and I at the local government level were supposed to know more about energy assurance than anybody. A guy named Jeff Pillon, P-I-L-L-O-N, in Michigan. You can find him. He knows more about, he coordinates and helps states with their energy assurance plans. You can find him at NASEO, NASEO.org. And look for him on the left-hand side as the, I think it's the Energy Assurance Coordinator or some title like that. But Jeff can help you with your individual state plan. Is that okay to do? I think so.
Very good. And we do have a link to NASEO on our background page. So that's basically National Association of State Energy Officials. Am I close?
Yeah, that's right.
That's correct. I used to be their policy director.
Excellent. Okay, well, those are some good tips. I appreciate that very much. Okay, we have a question from John Bowman, and perhaps Steve and George can jump in on this one. And he says, energy is a critical infrastructure sector. Considering aging infrastructure, climate change, more extreme weather events, et cetera, is the sector's capabilities to deal with disruptions improving, or is the gap getting wider?
Well, this is Steve. I'm sure George is going to want to answer this too, and maybe even Rhonda, but I'd say for a while the gap is going to be getting wider until this new technology, which I addressed a little bit, called Smart Grid, can get online and really catch fire and investments be made. As soon as that starts happening, it'll start in small service territories first with probably big utilities, because they're most likely ones to be able to have the financial resources to implement this. Until that happens, I think the gap's going to get a little bit wider. George, you have anything you want to add on that?
No, I would second that strongly, Steve. Thank you. I agree. Industrial utilities tend to be like big ships. They're slow to turn, and there's a lot of talk about smart grid, and there's a lot of money going into it thanks to stimulus funds, ARRA funds, and initiatives started within investor-owned utilities and, of course, municipals and electric co-ops, but it is worth somebody spending many years of their life maybe on a research paper or a document to write about. That's a great question, and I agree with Steve that it's wider in the near future despite all the money that's going towards smart grid. But we're making headway, but I think we're, you know, a decade away.
And I'd like to also ask a follow-up question to that one, since he mentioned some of the threats. I noticed on your slide, I think it was Steve, you know, you have the cybersecurity. Can you talk a little bit about that, what the risks are in terms of cybersecurity?
Well, as we all know, there's a lot of hackers out there, people who are interested in data systems, people who are interested in all sorts of interventions for good or for bad. It seems like most of them are bad, but that's one of the threats. You know, Rhonda talked about all hazards. Well, that's one of the hazards. Anyone, it seems, who's got some really, really good hacking skills or whatever you want to call it, are able to get inside of systems and disrupt them quite a lot, whether that's an energy system or a water system or a communications protocol or whatever it might be. And I can see very clearly how if someone wanted to target the energy sector, they possibly could do some incredible amount of damage. So that's what cybersecurity is putting up firewalls, is doing everything that everyone can to keep all of our systems up and going, because communications and information and data are flowing so freely and everything is so reliant on it.
Yeah, Amy, if I may, too, this is Rhonda. PTI has a free webinar next Tuesday, the 18th, specifically about cybersecurity for energy systems. And it's from 2 to 3 Eastern, and you can sign up on the energyassurance.us website. So that was a perfect segue. Thank you.
Yeah, fantastic. That's good to know. And I'll tell you what I'll do is in our follow-up announcement, I'll try to provide a link to that.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Very good. I've got a question from Ava Jean again, and she says, Rhonda, on one of your slides, exercises were mentioned. How or what do you provide to help with exercises?
Yeah, great question. Thank you. We have a pretty good section on the Energy Assurance website about producing tabletop energy exercises for local governments, and we've partnered with the group NARUC, which is the National Association of State Regulatory Officials. I'm sure I butchered that, George, sorry. But it's a great group, and they have produced some documentation called Tabletop in a Box. And so we just adapted that for local governments, and it's up on the website. Again, free of charge. Feel free to download it. Use it at your leisure. I think it's really good information to get folks started, and it walks you through the objectives for a tabletop exercise. It gives you some sample scenarios. It gives you ideas for how to use multimedia to engage the audience, and then helps you with an evaluation process at the end. So it's a pretty thorough, example of how to do a robust tabletop exercise. And then, of course, we're always available, too, if you want to do something, you know, a little more extensive than a tabletop exercise. We three can help, PTI can help, and then we have experts who have done more extensive exercising if you're interested in talking to them about that.
Very good. And I would like to point out that FEMA has developed a tabletop for this type of hazard, and we have a link to that also from our background page. Okay, let's see. Jody Horn has a question, and this is in follow-up to our discussion about the state plans. Jody says, it's been my experience that states won't share plans based on confidentiality. How can we ensure access to plans if it's been tagged as confidential? And, you know, this may depend on who, which department you're in the state that your plan is in. And I would expect that, you know, you might be able to get some help from your state emergency management agency if you are, you know, in local emergency management. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think George's comment was fantastic that, you know, Jeff Pillen at NASIO, the National Association of State Energy Officials, works with each of those states very, very closely. So if you are having some difficulty, if you reach out to your state and you say, look, we want to embark on an energy assurance planning process, and we understand you're doing the same thing, and you get some resistance, you know, the first step would be to reach out to us and see what we can do to help. And a secondary step might be to reach out to Jeff and the folks at NASIO and, you know, tell them what you're trying to do and that you're getting some resistance at the state level and see if they can intercede on your behalf. So there are lots of partners out there to reach out to help you reach your goal. George, Steve, any thoughts?
A great answer, Rhonda. I would advocate going directly to Jeff, and Jeff will get that information if we can't along with him. Great suggestion and great question. Thanks.
Very good. I would like to ask about George. Can you tell me a little bit more about the differences between version 1 or 2 and 2? You had mentioned, understanding your energy profile a little bit more. Were there other things that you learned during the course of this that were incorporated into the version 2?
Yeah, I'll take the first part of that and let Rhonda finish it.
Okay.
Thank you. Good question. The version 1, we did not talk about the energy infrastructure as much as we do in version 2. Rhonda and I wrote the majority of version 2, and Department of Energy officials were adamant and very strong, suggested strongly that we include lots of information on pipelines and petroleum industry and transmission, the energy network that we did not talk about as much. And that was consistent with the Department of Energy priorities. So that's a big difference. And then communication protocols, we talked about them quite a bit in version 2, whereas not in version 1. And then, of course, the 10-step process was added at the Department of Energy's urging too. Rhonda, any differences in 2 and 1, that between 2 and 1, do you like to point out?
No, I think you covered it. I think really the biggest difference is the breaking apart of the 10-step framework and really explaining in detail why those steps are important and why we chose those and how to really implement them.
Yeah, it's much tighter, Amy. It's much more useful. It's a much easier read, I think, and much more helpful. You don't have to read as much. You need to go right to what you need.
Very good. And I think that, you know, that 10-step framework is there is a document linked from our homepage that elaborates a little bit more than George did today, and I find that would expect that's going to be real helpful to folks to, you know, kind of see it at a glance and then get deeper in as needed. I've got a question from Isabel McCurdy, who is our Canadian friend, and she asks, are you partnering with any other international organizations or cross-border, let's say?
Ah, yeah, that's a very, very good question. Actually, there's been, I lived in Central America for 6 years, and I have a lot of contacts still, and they're very, very, very interested in this, you know, Mexico all the way down through Central America. So I know that the Pacific Northwest Institute up in Seattle is working across borders on some interdependency issues. So I really, really hope, was it Isabel?
Yes.
I really, really hope, Isabel, that you and I can talk, and I would encourage you to reach out to me, send me an email or give me a call, and let's investigate that further. There have been some exercises hosted by Department of Energy, you know, across the borders, and I know those have been very, very well received. But I think taking energy assurance both north and south is a fantastic idea. You know, it resonates very, very well. I'm actually working on some translations of some of the documents into Spanish. So, you know, we could certainly do that in French as well. So I think it resonates. You know, there's nothing that's super scientific about this. It's just it's a very, very good planning process, and it's very important. So I would absolutely encourage you to take these documents, Isabel, and share them with everyone, share them with your colleagues. And, I would love to go to Canada, so absolutely.
There we go. OK, Okay, we are running out of time. I got one more quick question from Ava Jean, who's asking, and I think Rhonda can address this. The webinars that you do, are there recordings of those available on your website?
There are. Yep, good question. There are, and the PowerPoints as well. So you can download them at any time at your leisure. We've released over the course of the last 5 months, we've released a guidance document and a webinar each month starting in July, so you can go back and look at those. And it's just another attempt to further break apart the 10-step framework. So we did it in version 2, and now we're even going further and producing guidance documents about certain steps of the 10 steps. So, you know, it's just additional information. You know, for instance, the cybersecurity webinar and document are available this month. It's in recognition of Cybersecurity Month. So the webinar will be next Tuesday. You can download the document free of charge and, you know, ask questions of the panel to talk about cybersecurity. But in November, we're releasing the document and the webinar on interdependencies. But, you know, we've released several other documents, so please, you know, feel free to go in, download the documents, look at the webinars, look at the PowerPoint, listen to the audio, share that with colleagues. It's all here just to, you know, to help you through your planning process.
Very good. And just before we close, Rhonda, if I may give you an opportunity, any other projects coming up that you want folks to be aware of?
Yeah, thanks, Amy. We actually do have something. It's putting on my other hat. While I staff at PTI our energy and environmental work, I also staff our public safety work. And for those of you who are on the phone who are interested, please drop me a line because we are starting a new project looking at biodefense architecture for cities and counties. So, and that's with a little bit of seed funding from the Department of Homeland Security. We're specifically looking at if a large, we'll say anthrax attack or something like that were to happen, and helping create a framework and an architecture for cities to respond to that. So it's a biodefense architecture and biodefense framework. What we're doing is we're putting together a survey, and we'd very, very much like to have your email address so we can send you the survey and have you fill it out and give us some your insights as to whether or not we're on the right track with this framework and with this architecture. And then we'll also do a series of webinars, and those will be up on the PTI website, so that's pti.org. So if you want to take a look at what we're doing, please feel free to participate in the webinars, ask questions, and then if you wouldn't mind leaving your email with me so that I can send you the survey. And also our friends from Canada or if anyone's joining in from the South, Mexico, through Central America, we're very, very interested in your input as well. So don't feel like you're being left out. I think, again, these issues cross borders. They cross boundaries. You know, something like this is terrifying to me, and I'm sure to you as well. And, you know, it's not going to stop at a border. It's going to continue. And we all need to work together to solve problems and to, you know, look at this issue and try to create frameworks and architectures to combat it when it does happen.
Thank you. We have run a couple minutes over, so it's definitely time to wrap for today. On behalf of Adrian and myself and all our participants, thank you very much, Rhonda, Steve, and George. This has been a good learning experience, and we very much appreciate your taking the time to be with us. And we wish you and PTI continued success with your efforts.
Thanks, Amy. We appreciate you having us. And thanks, everyone, for your time again.
Thank you. Again, the video recording should be available later this afternoon. And if you're not on our mailing list, just go to our homepage to subscribe. Before you run off, please take a moment to complete the form and any additional comments you may want to get posted. Our next program will take place Wednesday, October 26th. Please watch for our announcement and plan to be with us then. Until next time, thanks to everyone for participating today, and have a great afternoon. We are adjourned.